Okay, good morning, everybody. It is great to see everybody here. It is wonderful to be learning together. Rabbi Steinmetz, a pleasure to have you back. Wonderful to have you back in Shir. It is great to be learning. We're going to be learning on the topic of two roles of government in Israel. It's obviously a very timely topic for today's day and age. But let's start from the perspective of Torah. So our Shir is going to be focused on a very specific, a very beautiful idea, Maamar in the ideas of Rav Kook. But first, I'd like to take a moment to thank David and Naomi Kasowitz for sponsoring today's Shir. And that is in honor of Josh's upcoming wedding this Thursday evening to Sarah Lefkowitz, B'Shah Tova Umutzlachas. Mazal Tov. We enjoyed celebrating yesterday, and we're going to enjoy even more celebrating, God willing, this coming Thursday at a good and healthy hour, Be'ezras Hashem. And also another simcha is we want to thank Moshe and Liora Berger, who are sponsoring for the very exciting birth of a baby boy to Yossi and Mickey. And Be'ezras Hashem, this little one should enter Be'vriso Shalavra Bavino, Be'irtoi Vizmanoi, and continue, Mr. Hashem, his ascent in life to give you a tremendous nachas for many, many good years to come. Such wonderful news. Thank you for making this the Shir a place to celebrate together. So what we're going to do is the following. We're going to learn just one Gemara. No frills, no accessories. One Gemara. And just to see the depth and the complexity of this notion, this idea together, and try to unpack it slowly and precisely. So the Gemara is a Gemara which is a famous Gemara. It's a Gemara which, to me, every time I learn, there's something new in it. But what I would like to do is understand the actual pieces and then understand the picture. Okay, so let's understand the pieces first of all. So here we are. Here's what we're told. The Gemara in Brachos and Daf Yud, Amar Alav, tells us. We're just going to read through, learn through a little bit of the language itself, and then we'll try to understand the larger perspective. Amar Rav Hamnuna, the Gemara tells us in the name of Rav Hamnuna, one of the Amoraim, Ma dichsiv, what is it that is written? Mi kehachacham umi yodea pesher davar. Quoting a pasuk, the pasuk is in Koheles, who is like the wise person and knows what pesher davar? Pesher is from the pshara, compromise. How does who's the one who knows how to make compromise? Who is like the Almighty, who knew how to make some compromise between two righteous individuals. Between Chizkiyahu HaMelech and Yeshayahu the prophet. Chizkiyahu felt that Yeshayahu should come visit him. We know that Eliyahu the prophet went to Achav, the king. So therefore, I'm the king. Here's the prophet. He should come to me. So Eliyahu comes to visit Achav. Yeshayahu Amar, Leisi Chizkiyahu legabai, Dehachi Ashkechon b'Yehoram ben Achav, De'azel legabai Elisha. We know that in the next round of kings and prophets, Yehoram went to go, and who was the king, went to go to Elisha, who was the prophet. So they say, we both have models for who goes to who. And there's an impasse. Nobody can work out who should go to who. That's the question that we have over here in front of us. So now, let's just to go back in history, these kind of things, not to make light of it, but these kind of things have created great damage in Klal Yisrael. We'll call it impasses. Another example of this type of impasse is found in Sefer Shoftim. We're about to read it actually as the Haftarah of this week's parasha, Parashas Chukas. And that is where you have the leader of Israel, who's a man by the name of Yiftach, and he makes a very irrational and we'll call it impetuous decision, where he says, if I succeed in the war against these East Bank Ammonite tribes, I'm going to give whatever comes out of my Midalse Beisi, the door of my house will be a sacrifice to the Almighty. And out walks his daughter, and he's stuck. And so there's this. Does that mean he sacrificed her? Does it mean that he declared that she live a celibate life? A very complex situation. It is obviously fascinating to notice that his name is Yiftach, which means to find a Pesach, which is what he should have done. He should have found a way out of this neder. But nonetheless, the Gemara asks the very base. The Midrash asks the fascinating question. It says, "Wait a second. There was no spiritual leadership who he could have consulted, and he could have found a way out of his neder." The Gemara says, "There was, after all. Pinchas, 2 weeks time, is, well, was still around as a leader. He was blessed with longevity, and because he was blessed with longevity, he should have been able to to resolve the issue. So the Gemara says, why did they not consult with each other? So the Medrash says a tragic thing. Medrash says that Yiftach says, I am the leader, and he's the spiritual leader. He should come to me. I'm the general, right? And then Pinchas says, I'm the Kohen Gadol. He should come to me. And the Gemara ends tragically by saying that between the two of them, the daughter was lost. Meaning to say, between each of their obstinance in their not willing to go to consult with each other, the young girl between them was lost. And it says, don't worry, they all got their due punishment. It says Yiftach, died a terrible death. He had some sort of form of leprosy that caused his limbs to fall off one by one. So it says, that's why it says, Vayikover b'harei Ephraim. He was buried in the mountains of Ephraim, right? So it wasn't in one distinct location. And when it came to Pinchas lost his nevuah, which is why he no longer functioned as the Kohen Gadol towards the end of Shaftim. That's what the Medrash says. So these kind of, we'll call it, when we stand on principle, and it's not good. It's not good for us, it's not good for other people. And so we have this type of impasse forming. It's calcifying at this point in time between Yeshayahu and Chizkiyahu Melech. So Hashem says, I'm going to solve the situation. What happens? Ma'asakosh Baruch Hashem did the following. What did he do? Havi Yisurin al Chizkiyahu. He made Chizkiyahu sick. V'amar Yeshayahu, and he says to Yeshayahu, Leich uvaker esachoyle. Thank you. He says, go and visit the sick. Shenema v'yamim ha'em, chola Chizkiyahu lamus. Vayavoy love Elish Yeshayo ben Amot, son of Viva Yomere love, Komar Hashem Tzvakois, Tzav Lebeischo, Kimes Ata, Veloy Sichia. Vagana. So the Gemara says, so Hashem made Chizkiyahu HaMelech sick. So Yeshayo was now able to visit him as and do Bikur Cholim. And as he does Bikur Cholim, he comes in. And I'm not sure this is always the best tack this is the best way to open up the conversation. But he says to him, don't worry, you're all going to die. So that sort of, you sort of wonder what they would talk about after that. It's very hard to move from that to the sports scores or the weather. It kind of puts a little bit of a damper on the conversation, especially seeing as you're the prophet. It's not even like the doctor is like looking at the file at the door, and he says, son, there's not much time to live. But this is the prophet, after all. So this is a very, very disappointing kind of conversation. And in fact, in case you think there's a silver lining, he says, well, the Gemara says, my kimesata v'leisichya kimesata bo'olam hazeh v'leitichya v'olam haba. It's going to be final, right? There's no olam haba after this as well. Oh wow, that's certainly a very disappointing kind of bikur cholim visit to hear about. So Chizkiyahu says to Amale, my kuli high. What's the deal? What did I do so wrong that you should give me such terrible tidings? So Amale, mishum delay asakta b'piria v'rivia. You did not get involved with. You did not have children. You did not try to have children. Okay, so he was seen as just to appreciate this. Is that Chizkiyahu HaMelech never got married. He felt that he should not have children, so he didn't even get involved in marriage, and he was at this point in time a single king. Amalei, so Chizkiyahu says, I've got a good excuse. So Amalei, Mishum dechazayli beruach hakodesh tenofki minai benin deloy mali. He says, I know through my divine spirit, I can see in the future, that if I were to have children, would be loy ma'ali, not good children. So I'm doing a favor to the world by not having children. Now, a tremendous self-sacrifice. So he's saying, this is not a decision I'm making on a whim. This is not because I want to spend more time at the beach. This is because I know that it's going to be bad, so I'm going to save the world from this. That's a pretty terrible self-sacrifice. Right, very good. Comes back to self-fulfilling prophecies, exactly like last week. So it's a terrifying thing. So what do you do in this kind of situation? So he's trying to avoid the oncoming train. So Amale, Yeshayahu says to Chizkiyahu, which is a very, very powerful statement, something which resonates throughout history, Bahadi Kavshi Derachmon Olamalach. Why are you involving yourself with the secrets of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Meaning, that's not your business. Your business is not to work out the future, your business is to work out the present. You should have followed what you commanded to do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will deal with the end, you deal with the present, right? So don't try to navigate and manipulate and, and choreograph the future. Hashem will do that. You do what you're supposed to do. So Chizkiah Melech realizes he's wrong. So he tries to suggest a solution. So he says, "Omalei hash to havli bartach efshar degarma zuchus adidav and afkamina ibenin demali." So Chizkiah Melech says, "You know what? You're right. This is Yeshaya. I have a great idea. You're senior to me. You have a daughter of marriageable age. I'm a very eligible bachelor, and I have a problem. So how about this? We'll make a shidduch right here and now, and this will solve the situation. And because we both have such spiritual greatness, maybe we'll be able to produce a child that will avoid this future prophecy." So Amalei kvar nigzar alach gezera. So he says, "Sorry, too late. Chizkiah, you're dead. That's it. There's no way out. It's unbelievable. But this is not somebody giving a prognosis and saying 6 months. This is the prophet of God, right? So there's very little to beat around the bush here, right? He's not giving much wriggle room here. So Amalei, so Chizkiah Melech still disagrees. Kvar nigzor alecha gzer. Amalei ben amot tzay kale nevuascha vatzay. Close your prophecy, finish your prophecy, and leave. There is the door, Yeshayahu. So Chizkiah is not really prepared to listen to this type of closure. Kach mekublani mi beis avi abo. I have a tradition from my father's house. Avilu cherev chadam unachas al tzavro shel adam al yimna atzmai min rachmim. Even if you have a sword against your neck, a person should not desist from asking for mercy. Itzmar nami hachir Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Amir Shavayim afilu cherev chadam unachas al tzavro shel adam al yimna atzmai min rachmim shenemar hein yikteleni loy ayachel. Quoting a pasuk in Eov, very very famous, Eov says, "When you are going to kill me, I'll pray to you. Hey Nikteleni, loy ayachel. I will still ask for mercy. So even though God seems to be the one agent of the death, I will still try to ask for mercy." So Amir Bichanan afilu balach aloymas oimeloy laadam lamachar umes. Even if a dreamer, master of dreams, so some sort of oracle says to a person, "Tomorrow you're dead." There's many things which can be not perfect in prophecy and in dreams, and you don't listen to that. You do what you're supposed to do, and still work. So the Gemara finally says, he turns his face towards the wall. Is that turning to the wall of his chamber? Is that returning to the wall in his heart? Why is the wall in his heart relevant to this fascinating discussion? And he prays. He turns to the inside of his heart, and Rabbi Levi Omar al iske kir Omar lefonav. So he says it's referring to the iske kir, the issues that related to the wall. What wall is he talking about? So the Isha Shunamis gave a room. She made one wall to create a room for Elisha, and because of that, she was granted that her son was saved, and she had a son, and that the son would be saved. So my great 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 grandfather David Melech, who made the Beis Hamikdash, Shlomo Melech, who made this beautiful Beis Hamikdash, surely I should have the opportunity. I've been the child of that. I should be saved. Zechona Sasheri Salati Lefonecha BeEmes VeLeiv Shalem VaTov BeNecha Asisi. I did so much good in your to you Hashem. Ma Tov BeNecha Asisi. What is the good that I did? Omer Reb Yehuda. Omarav, Shesomach Gula Litvila. Because I put Gula next to Tvila, Rabbi Levi Omar Shagana Sefer Rufus. He hid the book, this some sort of book that was the book of Rufus. Okay. We're not gonna get into that for a second now, because that's its own discussion as to why these are the two things that he presented in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to survive. And he does survive, it's an amazing thing. And by the way, is the prophecy true? Yeah. Prophecy is true. He has a terrible son. He has a son whose name is by the name of Menashe. Menashe was a really bad guy, really, really bad king, not guy. He was one of the worst kings of all Israel, so much so that according to Sefer Melachim, the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed because of him. Pretty bad, right? He killed his grandfather, Yeshayahu. Right? So he murdered his own grandfather, the person in the story. I mean, like, pretty bad things that went on because of the son. So it all kind of came full circle. So let's try to understand this. So there's a lot of things to understand. One thing which to me is fascinating is it's the same midah of Chizkiah. He's not willing to accept doomed reality, which actually plays itself forward into Menashe as well. And this, just to me, is always fascinating, is Menashe was a bad king. So much so, there's two versions of the story, one in Sefer Melachim and one in Sefer Divrei Yamim Beis. Divrei Yamim Beis actually has a longer aspect or longer continuation of the story. We hear about all the terrible things that he does. Take a look at source 2, and then we'll come back to this idea of what's going on here as a whole. The Gemara, this is the Psukim in Deuteronomy Bayis Perek Lamed Gimel. We're not going to look at all of it, but if you look at the first section, you know, the first 9 Psukim, you can see some of the things that he did. You know, so he hevir his bono ba'esh and pasuk vav. He gave his children to Molech, right? That was the one of the Canaanite gods. He was oinei nichesh kisef also over yidonim. So he consulted soothsayers and he brought up the dead. Here what also is Rabbi Hashem la'achisai. And in Vayosim is Pesach Semel Asheros LaBeveis Elokim. He put a idol in the Beis Hamikdash. I mean, like really bad stuff. As Shalom Elokim, as David and Shlomo Benoim, Babai says they were Shalom Asher Bachatim Mikol Shev Tisrael Simesh Shmi LeElam. So really bad things. And he destroyed the Mizbech that Chizkiyahu HaMelech made, and he killed many people, innocent people. A lot of really bad things that he did. So at this point in time, We know that something interesting happens. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayovei Hashem Aleihem Esarei Atzavah Asher LeMelech Ashur, Vayilkudus Menashe Bachochim, Vayasru Benuchushtayim Vayilichu Bavela. So Menashe, the son of Chizkiyahu, was conquered by the Assyrians, who were the power at the time, and they took him in chains back to Babylon. Babylon probably means a suburb of Assyria, because right now Babylon's an insignificant, you know, blip on the radar screen. It says when he was in distress, he called out to Hashem, the God of his fathers. Hashem received him and brought him back to Jerusalem, and he knew Hashem was God, and he brought spiritual reform to the nation. The Gemara goes into more detail in Sanhedrin as to what that looks like. It says they were actually boiling him in a cauldron. That was how they were boiling him to death, and at which point he turned to God and he prayed to Hashem. And the angels would not allow his tefillahs to come up. The angels said, he's so bad that his tefillahs are not worthy of being accepted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then it says, metaphorically, dug a hole underneath his kisei hakavod, that it would be a channel through which Menashe's tefillahs would reach. And he accepted Menashe's tefillahs, thereby saving him and bringing him back. And to me, it's the same pattern as to what his father was doing, essentially, right? The same pattern is he has Chizkiyahu HaMelech on death's door. And Yeshayahu, the prophet, is saying you're dead. And yeah, it's the angel saying to Menashe, there's no way that you're going to be listened to. And what does he do? He still gets listened to. So it seems that same characteristic is transferred down to his son, even in the most dire of circumstances. Okay, so Menashe does it as a last resort. Yeah, so you're right. And even when his tefillah was seen as a last resort, he prayed to all the other folks in the pantheon before he turned to the Almighty. But nonetheless, it's the same pattern, which you see is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even at the we'll call it, when one reaches the dead end, one is still able to do this. Now, let me ask you a question. That's a good question. There's a discussion as to how sincere he was, and that discussion is expressed in the fact that Melachim and Derei Yomim are different to each other, and is expressed in the Machlokes Tanaim, the Mishnah, whether he lost or still gained his chelik in Olam Haba, and is in the Machlokes Amoraim, the Gemara. So that dispute as to how sincere he was is something which is seen throughout the tradition of Jewish history, where there's different versions as to how Menashe was able to succeed. Let me ask you a question. What would be the...
He followed through with his Jewah.
He did. Was it sufficient enough? Not 100% sure. They say that he wasn't able to remove the bombers. He wasn't able to change the people's heart necessarily, because the damage he'd done was not fully able to be undone. But yes, he did try the best he could. So the question was this under coercion, or was this because of full heart? And that's a discussion that's had in the Gemara.
Doesn't the cauldron
just sound like coercion? You're right. I guess in that foxhole, you know, so he was still able to, but the point that Paul's making is he did follow through, at least outwardly, in terms of the way he led the nation for the next few years, the next 2 decades. It's complicated person, but nonetheless, he still seemed to have that recognition. Now, let me ask you a question. What would what would you put as the title of this Gemara? If you were to like, sort of be, if you had this paragraph in the Gemara, what would you give as the title of this Gemara? What would the topic be?
Never go.
That's it, right. So this is what it's an unbelievably hopeful Gemara, right? Here you have Chizkiyahu HaMelech, he's sick. You have Yeshayahu Navi. You have this ability of somebody even really at death's door to have a renewed life. There's possibility. There's hope. Never give up. And that's I always learned this Gemara this way as well. What's fascinating is right, you can do teshuva, you can turn around, you can change the course of the ship, even on the day of one's death. It's a very, very powerful Gemara, and it's a very powerful story. The truth is that the Gemara actually gave the story a title, and most of us ignore the title. The first line of this Gemara actually told us what this Gemara is about, but we ignored it because we got lost in the story. What was the first line of the Gemara? What was it all about? This is our Pshara. This Gemara was about finding a compromise between these two individuals. Let's dig that a little deeper now. Now I appreciate what's really going on this Gemara. This Gemara is a profound story in and of itself, but when we take a step backwards, it's much, much more profound. Let's understand this on its own terms. So we're just going to, I have an opportunity of learning with a few chevron on Shabbos afternoons, Ein Aya, Rav Cook's Sefer on the Gemara. And it's remarkable insights, and I'd like to share something which is just a groundbreaking perspective on this. We do this half an hour before Mincha on Shabbos. And this particular idea is so unbelievably powerful that I think it's worth unpacking slowly. Here's what he says. There are two strengths of leadership in the nation of Israel. One is called Koyach HaMelucha and one is called Koyach HaNevua. Let's now move away from people and look at them as metaphors for ideas. So we have one we'll call it, the strain of leadership will be the political leadership, what he calls Koyach HaMelucha, as represented in this story by Chizkiah HaMelech. And then there's what's called Koyach HaNevua, which is spiritual leadership, and that is represented in the figure of Yeshayahu. And it's interesting when you look at a system of government, when you look at a nation which has to be ruled, the four, we'll call it the primary function of Koyach HaMelucha, of we'll call it political leadership, is to secure and ensure that there is going to be stability and there's going to be functionality of the present. Right? Meaning to say, what's the main focus of the government? The government should be that there is a police force, that there is an army, that there is an economy, that there is taxation, that there is safety. Right? These are the main focuses, and all of those focuses are about the here and now. Let this be a successful economy. Let the GDP per capita be rising per year. Let there be general satisfaction in society. Let the happiness quotient be rising. Let the depression numbers be dropping. Let society be successful. That's what's called Koyach HaMelucha. But there's another element, which is Koyach HaNevuah. And the Koyach HaNevuah is not so much focused on the nitty-gritty of the here and now, not so much focused on necessarily the economy, trade, international foreign relations. That's not really its focus. Its focus is on what we call the spiritual values of the society. Where is the society going? What trajectory is it taking? What does it care about? What are its value systems more than just? We'll call it stability and success at this point in time. And that is represented in Yeshayahu HaNavi. And it's very difficult to work out which of those two are primary. Because if you go to the extreme in either direction, you end up with a terrible society. Let's take the more obvious one first. If you have a society which is only governed by Koyach HaMelucha, which only has, we'll call it political governance, without spiritual value-based governance, you end up looking like what a lot of the West does look like today. A lot of the Western, now Europe's a number of years ahead of America, but America is sort of going in that general direction as well, which is that when you sort of remove religion from the picture and all you have is the values of a safe society and a successful society, you have a godless society which finds all kinds of very perverted value systems. Right, all kinds of very disturbing value systems, and it goes off the straight and narrow quite easily about all kinds of issues. And while it's at threat from fundamentalists, it's still trying to ban, ritual slaughter and all kinds of terrifying things. When you have a we'll call it valueless society, anything is possible, and when anything is possible, anything will actually be legislated. And we look at some very dark days ahead of us in Europe and even in America in terms of what a godless society looks like. Cults, right? All kinds of very disturbing individuals step into that void. On the other hand, let's look at the other kind of situation. What happens when you have a society which is governed only by Koyach HaNevuah, we're called future value systems, and not necessarily by current state of affairs and the value of today? What kind of country does that look like? Iran, good. Iran is a great example. So when you have, what was that, Baruch? Yeah, right. So let's say you're a zealous-based society, a society which only believes in the future but not in the here and now. So then the population are dispensable to the needs of the government right now, if you think about that. So when you have a theocracy, which is like what Iran is, which is run by the Ayatollah, then people are dispensable, and the economy, meaning to say, yes, the economy is on the brink of collapse, but it's fine, we'll carry on investing in the nuclear program because we're going to, we have a goal, and the goal is international power and threat, spreading terrorism and the destruction of the Zionist dream. Okay, you know, we'll do anything we can, even at the sacrifice of individuals. And that becomes, you know, in the microcosm, you know, if you go back 20 years to the Intifada, where, you know, when suicide bombers were, you know, being drugged up and strapped with explosive vests, you know, what were they telling them, right? The language they would tell them is, don't worry about now, because in the future you're going to get all kinds of great things, right? And that'll be all right. You can dispense of the present for the future. That's a very dangerous kind of society as well. So if you have a society, so to speak, which is only living in the here and now, that's a very dangerous kind of society. If you have a society which is only about the future, you also have a tremendous amount of risk. You need to have a society which has a value system at the same time as a value system of the future and also a current value system as to stability, political stability and safety, and care about improving the here and now, not just about improving the future. So then the question becomes, yeah.
Wasn't the time of the Shoftim basically Yisrael's ruled by Nevoah?
No, Yiftach was not a Navi. Yiftach was a military leader, right? Yeah. And the struggle that's being described there with Pinchas is who bows to who, right? So and in fact, the danger of Shoftim was that the political governance was not consecutive, right? So you had a Shofet arrive, another Shofet arrive, gaps in between, and people weren't so interested in listening to the spiritual leaders at the time. This is a kingdom at the time. Complicated. Even when it comes to Melachim as well, part of the struggle of Melachim is exactly the struggle over here. If we know that both are necessary, it's necessary to have a system, a society which is focused on a future value system, that there's not just a here and now, but it also needs to improve the here and now. So which of those two supersedes the other? Which of those two, when put into the same box, which of them comes first? And I think that's what the Gemara is actually asking. The Gemara is saying is Yeshayahu wouldn't come to Chizkiyahu and Chizkiyahu wouldn't come to Yeshayahu. What it essentially means is, who is first, right? Which of these values actually should be the first one governing society when both are necessary? And Yeshayahu says, I come first because I represent the spiritual values of the future. And Chizkiyahu says, well, I represent the values of society today. I need society to work, and therefore into that Nevuah should come. That's the question the Gemara is asking. Now, that's much more of a complex question. That's much more of a profound question. If you think about the government in Israel today, it's a complicated issue. Is where does religion play a part in the government, right? Should religion and religious values be the foremost deciding factor about all policy, or should it be the secondary? And the government's job is to do what the government's supposed to do, and should consult with the religious when it comes to values that relate to the religious. These are complicated questions, and the Gemara is asking that question. That's why the heading of the Gemara is not about, in fact, the specific story about Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu, but it's about how do you balance these values. And what's interesting is the Gemara doesn't say one or the other. Do you know how does the Gemara answer? Let's think about this in terms of the answer now. The Gemara gives us a fascinating answer. What does it do? Hashem makes Chizkiyahu, essentially, we'll call it political government, get sick. And then spiritual government comes to visit political government. That interesting? Which means, in a certain sense, what really happens? On the one hand, who is bending to whom? On the one hand, Yeshayahu is bending to Chizkiyahu. He is going to visit the government. But on the other hand, the government is sick and dependent on the spiritual government, which means the resolution the Gemara is presenting is a state of interdependence. That brilliant? It looks like the spiritual visiting. It looks like the Koach HaNevuah is visiting the Koach HaMelucha. But really, the Koach HaMelucha depends on and needs the blessing and the foresight of the Koach HaNevuah. That's the inextricable interdependence of the society of Israel. On the one hand, governing a safe and good society, a politically sound and stable society, a society which has foreign relations, but a society also governed by religious values in the future. And if you pull it to either extreme, when one side is ignored, you will have a failure of society. Which, by the way, many people in Israel today would want one extreme over the other extreme, and neither are going to be successful. You cannot have a society which is only Koach HaNevuah. You cannot have a society which is only Koach HaMelucha. It will take a very short amount of time for those two to fall apart. Finding some sort of coalition. Coalition is a very complicated thing. Coalition means, what's the word the Gemara uses for that? Pshara, right? to some sort of degree of pshara, where each one's giving a little bit, actually is in fact the way that it needs to go. Not simple. What that looks like in reality, I'm not advocating any coalition over another, because all of these are coalitions. What's been happening in Israel over the last few years is compromise. But who's going to compromise? And the Gemara, this is what the Gemara is investigating. Let's just push that a little further just to appreciate what the Gemara is saying then. So Chizkiyahu Melech is sick. That means to say that the government itself is in need. It's in dire need. Why is it in need? Because what was Chizkiyahu doing? What was he thinking about? He was thinking about, I have Ruach HaKodesh, about the future. What does Yeshayahu HaManavi say to him? Not your department. Do you see, you understand what Chizkiyahu is, the mistake he did? He assumed the role of being also the spiritual advisor of the nation. That's not your role. You understand? I, Yeshayahu, will tell you what's necessary about the future. That's my job. Your job right now is to make sure that the here and now is doing what it should be, and that includes you. You as the political leader, you as the king, need to be doing what you're doing now. And you know what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you a mitzvah, and the mitzvah is period of Arivia. You need to have a family. Do the best you can to do that. I, Yeshayahu, will tell you what you need to worry about the future. Don't overstep your boundary into the Koach HaNevuah. That's essentially what he's saying. Then let's flip it around to the next step for a moment. If that's the case, what was Chizkiyahu's response then? Chizkiyahu Melech says, even when the sword is upon the neck, I will still ask for mercy. Which essentially what he's saying is I don't care what you have to say about the future, I will still pray about the present. Which means to say, by the same argument that you made to me, I will now pray for the present because that's my department. And he was right. You can't tell me that I'm liable for the future if I can control the present right now. And that's ultimately how he succeeds. It's the, we'll call it reimagining the roles, which brings about the success of the whole operation. Once Chizkiyahu can be the Melech and once Yeshayahu can be the Navi, then they can ultimately succeed and coexist together. And that is what the Gemara is trying to convey to us. Yes, it is a story. Yes, it is something which occurred in history. But it's also the vehicles for a much greater discussion and debate in history. There is one last point, and I will just close this, which is also fascinating. The Gemara does have an interesting text, a subtext, which is quoted. It's actually quoted in the Gemara in Brachos in the Bach, in Rav Yoel Circus's notes. Can somebody just pass me a Brachos, if that's all right? I just want to see if I can... I want to add one last little line to this Gemara, because I think it's really fascinating. If you can see any... Brachas is around. I'm sorry to. Do we have any down there? Whenever you need it, it's not around. Yes.
How would people like Satmar and all those? How would they interpret this tomorrow?
I don't know. I don't think they're looking at the bigger picture. Thank you so much, Jonathan. I got it. So it's a good question. I think in today's society, certain segments of the society say the following. They say, we don't really care about the government. We're going to treat it like the governments in Europe, which we have no interest in. All our interest is in financial gain for our values. So we'll use whatever we can do to extract whatever we can from this government for our values, right? And there may be good values at certain times. But that's not a model that Rav Kook understands as Gemara is saying. And there are others who say, that was the ghettos in Europe. Forget all of that nonsense. We're making a country, and we're going to make a country which will ignore all of that stuff, and that's also a failed example of what this is meant to be. So not so simple.
They don't take any money from the government.
No. There are many who don't take anything at all, but there are many who are in the government saying we don't really care about the government, but we'll extract what we can. Right. So it's important to understand the complexity of today's society.
And Chizkiyahu is the same, basically from Pashas Korach, it was the same dichotomy that Korach was coming and saying, listen, I don't care, I see the future. And Moshe was saying, don't look at the future, you have to look at yourself.
Right, so there's a lot to talk about when it comes to that. There's a number of dimensions to that.
Chizkiyahu was more altruistic than Korach, was he?
Yes, so there's Chizkiyahu's 100%. Andrews, listen to this fascinating discussion. I never saw this because I never focused on this Bach, but the Rav Yoel Circus has an interesting extra addition in the text of the Gemara. I'm sorry for not putting it here. It says, Lesoif, Yoav Le Barte, in the end, Yeshayahu did give him his daughter, he did get married to Yeshayahu's daughter, Nafak minei Menashe v'Rav Shakei. So he had two children. He had Menashe and Rav Shakei. Now, this is fascinating. What this means is complex because Rav Shakei, the timing is hard to understand. Right? Because according to one idea, according to one tradition that we have, this episode of Chizkiyahu HaMelech getting sick was at the same time as the siege of Jerusalem, when the forces of Assyria were surrounding Jerusalem, at which time one of the generals of the Assyrian forces was a man by the name of Rav Shakei. So to assume that his child was Rav Shakei is hard to understand if that means physically or technically, or unless we bifurcate and we say that this episode of the siege of Jerusalem happened well after the sickness of Chizkiyahu, and the two are not traditionally linked, which might be what this text is saying. So he has these two children. Yumachada Arkavinu Akasve, he was bringing the two children on his shoulders. Lamtovinu Lebei Midrasha. And he's bringing his two sons to the base Midrash. Omar Chad Minayhu, Chazei Reisha Da Abba Lemitvei Be Guldina. So the Guldini. So the one of them says, look, we can use the head of our father, so to speak, to get lots of, you know, of pleasure and benefit from today. V'chad Omar Chazei Reisha Da Abba LeKaruvei Alei LeAkum. And the other one said, oh, we can use father's head to, you know, and to sacrifice to Avodah Zarah. So the two of them are both nefarious suggestions, right? One using father to enrich ourselves, another one using father to advance our spiritually nefarious agenda. He says, Chavtinu ba'ara, he threw them down to the ground. Menashe choyev Rav Shakei miss. And Rav Shakei died and Menashe lived. That's the Gemara's very strange story. So a few things you see from the story. Number one is sometimes people say, oh, Chizkiyahu, what a failure of as a father, right? He knew Menashe was coming, he had Menashe, and Menashe still turned out to be Menashe. So the first thing you see from this text, this additional text, is where was he taking them? The Beis Medrash. Of course Chizkiyahu did the very best he could to educate. And we as parents know that sometimes that doesn't even work. We try our best, right? let's be careful before we lay blame. That's number one. So it's these two children, and what's interesting is that essentially what these two children represent, as the Gemara is trying to describe, is the corruption of both of these ideas, right? So you have a Menashe, it doesn't describe who's who, but it's quite clear who should be who. The Rav Shakei person is the one who's saying that let's utilize dad, let's utilize father as a cash cow, right? As a way to have a successful life. We'll get, you know, our first, you know, Maserati at 16, and we'll get a nice Riviera, and it'll be a wonderful kind of existence. After all, we'll be the trust fund baby, and everything will be just great. That's the one perspective. The other one is Menashe, who's a little more corrupt spiritually. He says, let's use Abba, let's use the father's influence to create a Avodah Zarah, a shrine to Avodah Zarah. What essentially they're doing is they're actually the corruption of each of those two forms of leadership. The form of leadership when it comes to government and success in this world, making sure there are parks and making sure there is garbage removal and all those things that the political government are in charge of. Well, when that's corrupt, all you have is a society which is essentially looking at self-betterment and I, and no greater values, right? That's one corruption of the extreme of what the government looks like. The other corruption of the spiritual government is, well, let's have a spiritual government which is the wrong spiritual ideas. Let's lead it down to another, we'll call it a future value system path, about, you know, we'll cultivate a society which will serve other spiritual deities as well. So these are essentially that we'll call the bad variants that Chizkiyahu was destined to have, one on each side. What is interesting about it is that when Chizkiyahu HaMelech tries to intercede and he throws them both down to the ground, one of them lives and one of them dies. Now, it doesn't mean to say he killed his child, God forbid. What it means is that in trying to fix the situation, the one value system which will by itself dry up earlier than the other value system is the one which is fully involved in this world. That society will shrivel up faster. Why? Because a society which is focused on material embeddement and freedom from rather than freedom to will ultimately come to its own end. And that's what we're seeing with a lot of Western democracies, right, where they're sort of imploding upon themselves. There is just no future value systems. The Rav Shakei's of society are closing in on themselves because there is nothing. You can't go to war about a value because there's no values, right? You can't talk about society is good because you're only talking about yourself and your own embeddement. When it comes to the other spiritually corrupt society, we'll call it the Menashes of society, although that's a terrible thing, and it's a corruption of what it should be, but there still is hope because you still talk about values, right? The spiritual values, even though they might be the wrong spiritual values, you can still have a conversation. That's what happens with Menashe. Menashe has 180 in the middle of his knife, and he can turn around. So society governed like that, there's at least room for a conversation as to being able to pivot it in a positive direction in the future. It itself won't necessarily die by itself. It has the potential and capacity to be able to be shifted. So again, another perspective in, we'll call it, societies of the world, governed by the future, governed by the present. The dangers therein in both, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Oseh Pesher Davar. I think this is a model which we should be contemplating. Peshara, compromise, is perhaps the only way in which society, and certainly Israel and Jewish society, can possibly succeed. Rabbi, so thank you so much for taking the time.